People Leading People is a podcast about the stuff that pops up when you lead people at work. Join Brennan McEachran, CEO of Soapbox, and me, Jillian Bora, customer experience at Soapbox, as we interview the people leaders that inspire us most. Jill and Brennan here from Soapbox. Welcome to People Leading People. Today, we're chatting with Mike Katchen, co-founder of Wealthsimple, a global digital investment service that's turning the wealth management model on its head. Wealthsimple's mission is to make smart investing easy, low cost, and transparent for everyone. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
So again, for maybe a few that don't know, Mike and I now go back a little while.
And a couple months.
Two years. I joined this group basically because I saw Mike's name and I was like, yeah, I'll hang out with Mike. And Mike probably didn't see my name at all and was like, I'll do someone a favor and show up. But had the fortunate experience to get to know you and learn about your business and how you manage people. And the coolest thing for me has been seeing your business basically explode, which has been really cool and I'm sure exhausting for you, but really fun for me to watch from the sidelines. So
thanks, Brennan.
Thanks for having us here being here.
What do we do with this group?
I don't know.
Talk about our feelings.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's the craziest kind of anonymous cult-like thing. I describe it as like Alcoholics Anonymous for startup founders. So
that's for sure. It's fantastic.
But it's great. It's needed. And I'm glad we do it. And then this has kind of been an interesting thing I've been talking about for a while of like, man, some of these conversations that we've had in forum have been incredibly valuable for me as a manager and a leader. And I'd like to just spit them out if we can, while still being, you know, confidential, anonymous and all that fun stuff. So again, you're known and Wealthsimple's known all over the world now and you have the best ads, but maybe you should be in them, but you're not. So why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and how you became the CEO of Wealthsimple?
Sure. I grew up here in Toronto, and never really knew what I wanted to do. Almost started a few businesses, but never quite had the guts to do it. Ended up when I started my career in consulting, which a mentor of mine convinced me would be a great way to get started, learn some skills that would serve me well later. And I worked in that for a few years, working for big banks and technology companies on strategy. But the best thing I got out of my consulting years was I met a few folks that ended up founding a company in California called 1000 Memories, which was part of Y Combinator in 2010, before anyone heard of Y Combinator really. Yeah. And one day they called me and said, Mike, we got into this thing called YC. We don't really know what it is, but we're trying to build a business. And if you want unsolicited offer, come down to California and help us do it. So I moved out to San Francisco. We built a company.
There must have been more thought behind that. Like, what did you?
Well, the full story, which I'm not usually very public about, is I'd actually signed an offer to join another company in Toronto.
Oh.
And the reason I signed that offer was it was in private equity. Mm. And I was trying to convince myself I was going to do private equity different than everybody else. And the only reason I was doing it was to get close to the CEOs of the portfolio companies, to try to learn from them what it was like to build a business, to be a leader, to be a manager, before going out and doing it myself.
Right.
And so when I got the call, come join us, it was pretty obvious that that's what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah.
But I had this great fear that I would blackball myself from ever working in Toronto again for reneging on a signed contract. And so, anyways, I did.
You've been fine.
And I moved to California. We built that business. We sold it. And it was actually the process of selling it that inspired Wealthsimple. We suddenly had a group of friends that had some money to invest, and they asked me for help. I love investing. I've been doing it since I was 12 when my sister entered me randomly into a stock picking contest that I won.
Oh, really?
And it just inspired this lifelong love of investing for me. So my friends asked me, Mike, like, what should we do? Help us figure this out.
Yeah.
And I built a simple spreadsheet that showed you how to manage your own money, how to build a portfolio, how to rebalance it. And the feedback they gave me was, Mike, we love this approach, but heck, we're lazy. Just do it for us.
Yeah.
And they became the first clients and the first employees and co-founders of Wealthsimple. And we've iterated on that problem ever since. It's how do you make investing, which most people know is important to help you live the life you've always dreamed of, to reach your goals long-term, how do you make it simple and accessible through great technology? And we've been fortunate that that's, you know, resonated with lots of people.
tons of people. Mm-hmm. And it's been interesting even to see it. I remember, I think it was like the first Tech Toronto or one of the first Tech Torontos, and you showed the spreadsheet or something. And I was like, oh my God, like that's like early, early beginning days. And the cool thing for me, and I'm a Wealthsimple customer user. I don't know.
Thanks for your business.
Of course. And convincing the team to join, is I think you've really kind of turned investing on its head, where, you know, most of us think of, we want to retire one day and we got to put our money aside and don't really know how to do it. And Wall Street is probably where money should go, but it's scary. And a lot of people are down on the trading floor throwing hand signals at each other, which is totally wrong, and made it something that's approachable and normal and simple. So it's been really cool to see that message just resonate. And now see, for me, the funny thing, and maybe it's not funny for you, but again, I get the privilege of being on the sidelines of your business, is seeing the banks, the big banks, and firms take notice and kind of chase you around town with billboards and things like
that.
It's
cool. I mean, it's cool. When we launched the business, most of the kind of traditional investment industry was pretty dismissive.
Yeah.
You know, that this is a cute idea, but, you know, they'll never really get anywhere because we're the banks and everybody trusts the banks. But today, you know, we have more than 70,000 Canadian clients, more than $2 billion in assets. And some of the banks have entered our space directly and are competing with us, but we've still managed to maintain. The latest numbers I've seen is like an 80% share of the clients in this space in Canada. So it's been pretty cool.
So you have this idea, you want to grow really, really quickly, thinking big about it. And you know you're going to have to go and aggressively take customers. One of the things that I think I've learned the hard way is relinquishing a little bit of control so that you can grow faster. Now you must have done it in my head, it would have been a crazy pace to go from, I think you're like 20 people to 150, like 2 years or something crazy. What was that process like as you kind of crossed the 10 people mark, the 30 people, the 100 people? And you're, how many people are you now?
I think the latest is we're about 165 across three offices.
Yeah.
So we're in Toronto, New York, and London.
Right.
It's been tough. I think, you know, the toughest part for us is you often hear founders that have built really great businesses you admire talk about how the early years are all about get your culture right, solidify your culture, get the core working, and then scale. We didn't really have time for that. We've kind of had to build the company in parallel to building the team. And so figuring it out along the way, and I think the only constant that has been clear for me is change. Like, I have a different job fundamentally every 6 months, and my co-founders and our leadership team feel the same way.
Right. So what is your job? What would you say your job is now at 160 people?
Great question.
Or what, I guess, like, right now you're probably figuring out what your job is. 6 months ago, what was your job?
I try to split my time these days between, like, three broad areas of the business. You know, one would be the company. So company building. So recruiting talent, culture, values, spending time with the team, and ensuring that that part of the organization is humming and people know where we're going and are excited about the mission and all that really important stuff. The second piece I try to spend time on is the outward facing stuff. So, you know, fundraising, spending time with our shareholders and stakeholders, press, and being like a, you know, trying to be a brand and a brand ambassador for the business, which has really been a helpful driver of growth for us. And that's kind of the second category. The third I like to think of is everybody in the company knows how to double the size of the company. That's what everybody does every single day. But how do we 10x the business?
Right.
Very few people have the bandwidth to make time for that kind of problem solving. So I try to spend time in that area and, you know, place bets that may take years to pay off. Mm-hmm. But if nobody did, we wouldn't have those growth channels, you know, when we need them 2 or 3 years from now.
So you're talking kind of about constant change. And one of the things that you try to do is keep people aligned to vision and mission and all of that. What are the things that you do now to help keep people aligned and understanding how their work impacts your greater goals? And how has that changed since you were a smaller company?
I'd say when we were smaller, it just happens naturally. It's almost like, you know, I got to hang out with everybody on the team. I got to work with people on the team on product, on marketing. And so you know, you don't have to put much thought into it. Mm-hmm. And it was when we really started to scale the team and I started to get to know people less and less and started to depend on, you know, these levels in the organization to lead the day-to-day operations in the business, yeah, that setting their structures in place became much more important. Mm-hmm. So like a few that have been helpful, we have a weekly all hands meeting, mm-hmm, which we've had to iterate on the content, the design, when it is, many times to make sure it stays useful and helpful and relevant. But that's the chance I get every week to get up in front of the company and talk about values and vision, you know, celebrate success stories. And we've actually started rotating it, so it's not just me that leads it, but it's actually anyone on our leadership team, which I think people have really appreciated.
And you have three offices,
yeah,
right? So do you do three different ones, or is it one big video conference?
One, type? We've invested like probably too much time and energy and money in trying to build video conferencing, so it's like feels like everybody's in one room, though video conferencing always sucks.
Yeah.
So, you know, the kind of New York and London, I think, do always miss a little something of the special sauce, but we try to also make sure people have the ability to travel. So a lot of people move between offices,
right,
quite regularly to ensure there is that great connectivity.
So that, and sorry, just to jump right into it, that all hands, because we do one here too, which my agenda is like different every single time. Do you have a stock, what you go through, an order?
Yeah.
How has that evolved? What do you cover? What's important? How long is it actually?
It's a half hour.
Okay.
Every Friday, 165 people. It's called holy time because the implication is you have to be there. It's,
yeah,
like not optional. It's, you know, holy. It's special.
Yeah. It's a ritual. Yeah.
And, you know, the content's changed. Today, we spend time on news and updates for the whole company that are relevant. Metrics. We're really metrics driven.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about how we're doing against our goals. We spend time on a few, like, what would be maybe more distinctive things. So one is FUD.
Yeah,
which is a concept we stole from Stripe. You know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt gives anybody in the company the chance to air what we call an existential concern about the business. And its defining quality is it doesn't get a response. So it's kind of cool. You just let people say things that are on their minds that are concerning. You just let it linger. It's kind of like awkward the first time.
And you must have started that when you were small.
Yeah.
That's not something you start at 150 people.
We probably started at about 50 people.
Okay.
FUD. We try to spend about 5 or 10 minutes every week on an AUA and ask us anything,
yeah,
where you can ask the founders anything you want.
Cool.
And then we do kudos, and kudos is celebrating values. So we have 5 values, which we've tried really to make something that aren't just posters, but are things we live. And the way we do that is we celebrate people that have lived up to them, and we hire against them, fire against them, and kind of make it part of the company conversation.
Back on this FUD thing, I think that's an interesting concept. 2 questions. Do you ever find, I mean, I personally would think that could be intimidating, especially as the company grows larger, to just stand up and say, this is the thing that I'm worried about. And, you know, maybe other people aren't worried about that because they know something I don't know and I'm putting myself out on a limb to say this. So do you notice that people get nervous about it?
For sure. But I would say we care deeply about transparency. We want people to feel that it's okay to have those concerns.
Mm-hmm.
So like examples, you know, our board documents are made in Quip and accessible to everybody in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel like, you know, Slack is generally open. We try not to use email. But the concept behind it is smart people, when given access to information, make smarter decisions. And so we try to have this culture where it's okay to ask tough questions or,
mm-hmm,
to be concerned, and there are no repercussions for doing that. And it's funny, I was debating with a co-founder last night because we actually, to address that, because yeah, for sure, still people feel a little bit uncomfortable. We made it possible to submit anonymous FUD.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, AFUD.
AFUD. and we were debating its merits,
yeah,
because on the one hand, maybe you get more FUD. On the other hand, it kind of undermines that
yeah,
culture you're trying to create, where you feel comfortable saying things,
yeah,
and you know, you want people to perceive FUD as like internet trolling, where like it's just a place to bash,
yeah,
ideas,
yeah,
or concepts.
It could bring down,
yeah,
morale because somebody else could just say, "Oh yeah, that's weird," and we're not addressing it. And
I'm not sure there's a perfect answer, but,
mm-hmm,
for us, I think people like appreciate that they can do that. I think there's a value in that that creates a good
mm-hmm,
input to the culture.
And in terms of the not answering and letting things linger, I mean, I would think that that could be very interesting, but also could become frustrating for certain people if you're saying, well, I'm trying to tell you that something needs to change and I don't maybe have the answer, but I want to know that it's being worked on. Are there other mechanisms in place to follow up with these people or to get to let everyone know what's being done with these existential problems?
So, yes, that is an issue. I would say that the way it's evolved for us, we introduced about 6 months ago, in addition to FUD, an Ask Us Anything section, which if you're looking for a response or you want, you know, one of us to talk about how are you going to react to this, that's your place to really get that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And FUD, you know, FUD is shared and sometimes it is really important for us to follow up on it. So we make sure to do it. It's just we don't do it in the meeting to preserve that.
Write an article about it or write something about it. So you mentioned there that you know you really don't want to create a culture where, or I guess you really want to create a culture where anyone can ask anything and it's fine. It can be uncomfortable, it can be whatever, and it's okay. And then just prior to that, you mentioned you're now starting to rely on the layers of management in between you and those, and your employees to actually grow the company and manage the company. So how do you find those managers that also feel the same way? Is that something that is actually becoming easy or was always been easy? How is that kind of, you know, the first part of your job recruiting? What have you kind of learned from that experience?
Well, I spent a good part of our early days running recruiting myself. And so I would say until we were about 45 people, I led recruiting at Wealthsimple, and I think that was really important. And for us, I think we try to find people that will fit into our culture and believe in our values. Like we really, this whole values thing, I think it was easy. You know, before I was a founder, I probably didn't care enough about values,
yeah.
But it's clear that done correctly, it's a really helpful and important way to build a business is to codify your values and live them.
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, finding great managers and leaders in the business has been around, you know, are these people that represent our values, that are going to live up to them, that are going to do it in ways that are better than we can ourselves. And I think that's been our strategy is hire people that are smarter than us to take on pieces of the business and give them all the support in the world to do the very best work of their lives. That's kind of the way we think about recruiting.
Yeah. And by default, let them be themselves, which is smart, talented people.
Mm-hmm. And as somebody who is in the process of becoming a Wealthsimple customer,
thank you for your business.
Yes. Yeah. Just going through all the steps. You know, it is a nerve-wracking thing for people who don't have a ton of experience with investing and who've just sort of let the big banks do what they do because it's easy to trust a big bank because you know that they exist. You've heard of them. They have a track record. Are you hiring? I would imagine that in departments like customer success and in those kinds of more customer facing roles, are you also looking for people with experience managing wealth, or is it more of a we teach you the fundamentals and our tool really does the heavy lifting and we're here to provide amazing customer support and we're looking for people who have that customer experience?
It's a mix. You know, in our customer support team there are customer support representatives, and then there are also financial advisors. And part of our job when clients call is making sure that if they're looking for financial advice, that they get routed to the right place.
Yeah.
But if they're looking for more technical support, you know, someone else can handle that. And actually, we invest a lot in training. So one of the career trajectories or paths for our customer support team, and that's a whole new thing, by the way, creating career paths.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Is to become a financial advisor. So we will give you the support and training required to help you pass your exams and actually become a licensed advisor if that's something that's interesting to you.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Super cool. Okay, so you brought it up yourself. Career paths. When did that become like an urgent need for Wealthsimple and how did you kind of build it out? What did you learn in that process?
I don't think that became important by size of team. I think that became important by tenure.
Right.
It's like after someone had been around for a year or 2 years, they start asking themselves, like, what's my next challenge?
Yeah.
And it becomes really important, we've learned, to create that challenge and opportunity at the company because you don't want people to, your best people that have been doing great work and have been trained up in your way of doing things to leave.
Yeah.
And when you're growing fast, you're fortunate to have all sorts of cool opportunities, both more traditional, like, you know, the next stage in your career is to become a manager or a senior manager, or, you know, totally different parts of the business, if that's interesting to you. So I would say probably around year two for us is when that really started becoming important.
Yeah. And then the interesting thing I've always thought about career paths is by default, if you're not really purposeful about them, it becomes the track of management, right? And it's like, you're a support person, now you're a team lead for support people, now you manage support people.
Made that mistake.
Yeah.
Sure did.
So walk me through that. Why was that? What was the mistake you learned there? And what did you do, I guess, to not do that again?
Not everybody wants to be a manager. And I think that, you know, traditionally that was the view. That's how you were successful, is you kind of followed this very structured path where the more people you manage, the more successful you are. Reality is, like, that's just kind of old school thinking and not what everybody wants. So we actually, you know, a perfect example in our engineering team, some of our best engineers that love to code, that if they had their way, all they do all day is code. We said, you're doing an amazing job coding. Why don't you become a manager? Because you're doing so well at this, why don't you do something entirely different?
And it's management, especially for engineers, salespeople, it's a career change.
Oh,
it's basically a career change, and we think of it as a
promotion. You suddenly become a psychologist,
yeah,
you know, and a motivator and a leader who's dealing with people issues. You're not, you know, if you love technical issues, it's not necessarily what you're going to be spending your time on anymore.
Yeah.
And so we had some people do that, and it was clear that they were very unhappy with that, that path. So we backtracked and we created.
Can you backtrack on those people?
Yeah.
Like, can you?
If part of this all goes back to this culture you create. If you have a culture where it's okay to make mistakes and people are okay to talk about it, hey, I have FUD. You know, I don't like what I'm doing right now, and I loved what I was doing a month ago.
Well, that's a brave FUD.
That's a brave engineer leader.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's important. Yeah, maybe. But I think that's just part of the culture we're trying to create. You know, I wouldn't want that to stand out as brave. I just want that to be honest and part of a conversation. And so we backtracked and we created the principal engineering role, which now we have a whole bunch of our technical team move into, which is you can have the same career trajectory, the same advancement in compensation, the same advancement in terms of like stature and status and visibility and seniority. Not that we care about hierarchy, but just the roles that, you know, feel like you're progressing in your career through that path rather than having to manage people. And that's been a really powerful change for us. And we've implemented it not just there, but in other parts of the business too.
Yeah, that's actually so interesting because I feel like I'm more on the sort of first-time manager, just kind of getting to that point where I'm starting to manage people and not just do my own job. And my friends and I talk about that all the time. I have a lot of friends who work in advertising who are amazing art directors or amazing writers, but they don't want to be creative directors because then all of a sudden 100% of your time is spent in meetings and talking to the client and negotiating and doing all these things that those aren't the skills that you have been working on for the past 10 years and really trying to perfect. So I think that's really cool that you guys are doing that. That's something that I think a lot of people are looking for. So
it's yeah. I mean, and even if you do want to go the management route, you know, you kind of need to brace yourself for it. Like, I love product. I love doing product. I don't get to do product anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I spend a lot of my time in that first third bucket of team and spending time with people, hearing about people's problems.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're like okay with that and want that, you know, that's part of how you build a great company. So for me, that's important. And I do enjoy it. Thank God my mom's a psychologist. So I grew up around, you know, talking about your feelings and your problems. But got to know that that's what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah. 30% for you, 30% of your time is dealing with random problems. Most of them people problems, probably. Cool.
All right, cool. Okay, so we are at the 5-minute mark, which means it's time for our secret question, best part of the show. So, Mike, you've got 3 cue cards in front of you, labeled 1, 2, and 3. I want you to pick one. You can't see what questions are under it, just so the audience knows. And then I want you to read the question out and give us your most honest answer.
I'm picking question 3. Ooh. What's the hardest conversation you've had with an employee?
You did it to yourself.
I did it to myself.
You do not need to name names.
Please don't.
Please don't name names.
You know, I think one of the hardest things that happens when you scale an organization is you know, when you start a business and your first few teammates that you're working with become like family, you spend all day with them, you're trying to will something into existence against all the odds.
Yeah.
And you develop this just deep caring for those people. And this is, you know, maybe this is the cliche example, but as you build a company, sometimes people are no longer in the right roles. And sometimes people don't scale in the same way or at the same speed as the business, or don't like the direction that you're going as a business. Mm-hmm. And the hardest conversations I've had to have been around that, have been around someone that A, was so capable or is so capable and is doing an awesome job, has had such meaningful, important contributions to the business. We wouldn't be here without them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, for whatever reason, they're struggling with this next change or this next scale up. And in a couple cases, it hasn't worked out. And it was absolutely heartbreaking, you know, having that conversation with someone who feels like family and having to part ways. Those have been the absolute hardest conversations I've had to have.
All right, I'm going to push you to go. You're having coffee with a founder, you're having coffee with a manager, a leader, and they ask, hey, I'm about to have one of these heartfelt, painful conversations. How do I bring it up? Where do I sit? What do I say? Coach me through it. What do I do?
I'd say of the things I've learned, one is you usually feel worse going into the conversation than you do on the other side. And so trust that. So don't put off the conversation, which I think a lot of people tend to do because they have so much fear about it. The second is be honest and be upfront. You know, don't ramble. Be direct. You know, and unfortunately, if you have to let someone go, it's almost that's the first thing that should come out of your mouth. And you should do it with all the empathy and sincerity in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And be honest. And in general, I think that formula is the one that works. And, you know, they're not easy conversations, but they're generally go better than you think. Because often, you know, if you're at the stage where that has to happen, often it's not a surprise to someone, or they're unhappy because obviously something's not working. And if you care about them, the answer isn't, you know, hey, this isn't working out, go away. It's, I care about you and I want you to be successful, you know, and here are some things that I'm willing to do and going to invest in to be helpful and supportive.
Okay. I'll keep pushing. So what are those things that you think are worthwhile for, say, the average person to offer? To be supportive. If it's not, you know, if the answer isn't, you know, hey, we're parting ways. What are some of the other answers?
Well, often, you know, even when it is parting ways, I mean, some of the things we've done to be supportive include, you know, career counseling. So we bring someone in to come and do a career assessment, give suggestions on kind of where a next path would be, introducing the recruiters that we respect that can help them find a position and marry that with a reference. You know, a lot of these people are strong, you know, for us, in our case, we're incredibly strong performers, just not necessarily in the right role at that time. And so I have no problem giving the most glowing references in the world. And being as supportive as possible for these folks to be successful and wherever they end up.
Awesome.
That doesn't mean it's not heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's still heartbreaking. Yeah, it still sucks. Awesome.
All right. Well, we're just about to wrap up, but before we do, we wanted to hand the mic over to you for 30 seconds. So if there's a pitch you want to make or any last words you want to leave us with, it's over to you.
Well, my pitch is everybody should be a Wealthsimple customer, but my true pitch is, you know, we're talking to people that care about leadership and management. I think that it's never been a better time to be an entrepreneur, whether or not you're a founder or working in a startup. I think we're in the most incredible time to try and make a difference by solving big problems and by doing that in the businesses that we build. So my pitch is that everybody should go be an entrepreneur and go solve problems. There's never been more problems that need solving. And to think big about the problems we're solving. I mean, one of the themes I care about as a Canadian, which may not be relevant for everybody that's listening, but for Canadians, is we need to go build more global companies. So think big about the businesses we're building and you know, go have fun.
Amen. That's very inspiring.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for your time, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
People Leading People is produced by Soapbox and edited by Joel.
goal north. Soapbox helps managers lead better by giving them a place to have more productive one-on-ones, team meetings, and company-wide discussions. Go to soapboxhq.com to download our free app. If you liked what you heard today, do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the reviews. And if you're really feeling the love, leave a comment with a secret question you'd like us to ask in an upcoming episode.